Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today we have Will Allison. Will is a bass player, performer who plays around Nashville here with his band Wild Bill and the Bruisers.
If you are listening to this episode on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out live performances from all of our guests, including Will Allison. Give us a like, give us a follow, subscribe, ring the notification bell. All of that stuff helps us out a ton. Check it out. Actually, let me do one more. If you are listening to this episode on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out live performances from all of our guests, including this week's guest, Will Allison. Give us a follow, subscribe, hit that notification bell, like those videos. It helps us out a ton. Hope you enjoy the episode. Let's go to a sounds game soon, guys. It's been too long. Let's do that.
Come on.
We gotta, you hear it? Nashville's, they're like pretty much guaranteed to get an MLB team soon.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Where the heck are they going to put the stadium?
I think they're going to build a new one. So you know where like the scrapyard is that just got bought? I heard they're
right
gonna
across
build.
From downtown, kind of.
Yeah,
they're like, that'd be interesting.
I've heard that there's so much radon.
They're building another one, another stadium.
That's insane.
Obviously, there's so much pollution in the, it, like soaked into the
point,
ground.
It's like, you know, I want one more stadium.
Oh gosh,
dude, I saw today that, or not today, I saw this past week that right outside of my neighborhood, across from the Publix, they're putting a Whataburger, which I. I'm not a Whataburger guy. I'm sorry that we just lost a sponsor, but
don't like
not
Whataburger,
a Whataburger. I remember, you know,
it's
the first
very overrated.
The first time we Good had riddance. Whataburger, the first, first time we had Whataburger, we were on tour with Mallory Eagle, and she, I love Mal, but goddamn,
that was my first time too having Whataburger,
and she was like, "We're going to Whataburger. You boys are gonna like, you're gonna love this."
Because there was a whole like Whataburger versus In-N-Out debate going on.
In-N-Out wins for me.
Oh my god, it's not even close.
It's not even
we got
close,
to Whataburger, and Brian and I were like, "What is this shit? Are you like punking us right now? Like,
and
this is trash."
It was very mediocre, and they were like, "Oh, we just like didn't go to a good one. Like, we'll try." And then we went to like another one and tried that. It was just as shitty.
Yeah,
and it was like, yeah. This
man, we're really losing sponsors quick here, guys.
They have one like right over here. I haven't gone to it though.
Rusik Podcast brought to you by Topo Chico.
There you go. We're just gonna start really whoring this out.
Topo Chico.
There we go.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I do think it'll be fun if we have. Honestly, though, I like. Okay, don't get me wrong. Professional MLB, that's great. Like, I love going to see an MLB game, but I do love going to see Triple A baseball or Double A baseball too.
Bro.
Like, we had some great Triple A, Double A teams in SoCal. I mean, there is something really fun about that. Whereas I feel like a lot of sports, when you see that sport played at not quite the caliber you're accustomed to, it can seem not as entertaining. Mm-hmm. Whereas baseball, it almost makes it in a way more entertaining because you acknowledge, oh my god, how hard the action of baseball is, and when you see it played, gives you an appreciation, because then when you see it performed in the professional setting, you're like, oh my god, even just the most fundamental plays of baseball are so fucking hard.
Well, here we are in like I don't know when you got what your schedule for release is, but right now we're in the throes of like Little League World Series.
Mm-hmm. They had that. I saw that. Yeah.
I sat down and saw like a Little League World Series game the other day, and I mean, it's just as riveting, and these kids are throwing their bodies all over the place. It's like watching, high school football instead of like pro.
Yeah,
I think reckless abandon with their limbs. It's just like,
I think like the natural progression of sports, like people just get like too good to where it's like not as fun to watch. Yeah. Like my cousin's super into basketball, and I don't know shit about basketball, but he was telling me that
boring as shit.
Like, just because people throughout history, they get better and better and better.
Yeah, for sure.
He's telling me it's like not as fun to watch anymore, just because like everyone can just make a half court three pointer. Like, it's nothing.
It's different. Yeah.
We're past the days of Larry Bird.
And, yeah.
But I think it's also interesting too, because I think a lot of that is there's absolute truth in that. I mean, you can see that played out, like talking about MMA. You can see that played out in a sport like that that's so new. I mean, so this is an obvious example, but even something like calf kicks. I mean, that just wasn't around a decade ago.
You know what I mean? I think about like watching old Don Fry fights.
But
like,
I think what's interesting about certain sports is the skill set obviously does develop to a point where people are just frighteningly good at it. Like people are frighteningly good at basketball, football, et cetera. I think what's interesting about certain sports like baseball is, yes, people get really fucking good at hitting a curveball. People also get really fucking good at throwing a curveball. So when there's that's one of the things I do think is interesting about the sport of baseball is, again, just on a design standpoint, it goes both ways.
Right.
Whereas like the basketball is not going to be getting any better. Like, you know what I mean? Like the basketball is not getting any harder to throw, but that's true. That knuckleball pitcher is going to be throwing you something that you're just not used to seeing.
And then on the other side of the ball, you can look back. There's been crazy defensive plays going back decades and decades. Yeah. I think about like a guy like Bo Jackson running up like the wall to catch a home run, just snag it, you know? Yeah. A dude who is like, this is also back. I don't know if he was juicing, but this is back in the good old days. He'd strike out and be so pissed off, he'd snap the back on like right on his leg and just.
I think too, like people get so good where just everybody's so good. It's much more rare you get impressed by things just because like you don't get as many like standout people just because like everyone's too good.
But I think it's one of those things that anything in life that can give you perspective on those moments, to me, are some of the best parts of life. When you can, when you see a particular, you can see this played out in music. If you go see a phenomenal band, a band that is so fucking good that it's just melting the inside of your brain, and then somebody flubs a note or something, there's a human moment there where you get a peek behind the curtain, and it doesn't, to me at least, and I think this is true for most people, it doesn't spoil the thing. It just makes it that much better because you are all of a sudden, your system recalibrates and you understand, oh, this is the level that we're playing at right now. And that, I think it happens in music. I think it happens in sport. Anytime you have those, and that's why those imperfections in art are the things that oftentimes I just adore, because
it's like
it gives
a supermodel
you that context.
With a gap in your teeth. You know what I mean?
No, that's exactly what
it's
like,
whoa,
it gives
it's an
you,
angel
it gives
on
you
earth.
That understanding of what you're playing with. You know what I mean? Whereas like sometimes, and I think that's something that's lost in music, contemporarily, I think that's something that's lost in music oftentimes, is there's so much sort of polish and sheen that you lose the human element. And sometimes you don't want that human element for certain styles of music. Sometimes it goes against the overall sound that you're going for. But I think in most elements of life, it's not that people are forgiving of those things, it's that people need those things. People need to see those moments, and it's not necessarily that it doesn't even need to be somebody, you know, misses the ball or totally flubs the solo. I don't mean like, but just those moments of something to contrast the greatness against.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, I think about like like whenever we're doing the downtown thing and Ryan like has everybody slack-jawed looking at him just like playing really really fast, just Danny Gatton fluidity.
People don't really like it's people
and then he
who
breaks
don't,
a string.
Yeah, people who don't play music. Like, okay, the Bruisers are that is one of the craziest bands you will ever see, and not just
a different thing.
and not just in terms of the sort of wild antics of the thing, but just the level of musicianship is so fucking high that this is something I was kind of wanted to pick your brain about too, because oftentimes the folks that you're playing for, whether it's in whether you're playing down on Broadway and you're getting a bunch of tourists in there, or whether you're playing a corporate gig, whatnot, you're playing for people for whom music isn't, that's not their world, right?
Right.
There's sort of an outsider perspective there. And I wanted to kind of pick your brain on the idea that I don't know how you would go about this without bringing ego into the equation too much, but how do you think they take in the level of musicianship that's involved? Because it's so goddamn high in that band. I mean, all of you guys are monsters, but do you, because I don't think that people, the most of the people that you're playing for recognize how unbelievably good you guys are, on top of, again, like the fun craziness and antics and all that stuff, which, you know, is also just an absolute blast. That to me is fascinating.
Man, you know, that's interesting. It's interesting. We do play the Broadway gig is geared toward the partier. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The person that came in from like far away. We get a lot of Midwestern people, a whole bunch of, we just, you know, visited a whole bunch of buddies from the Northeast on this last tour. But you know, just a whole bunch of people that like, okay, this is my vacation. Where we go, like, every day we could go to Broadway. You know, it's just right there, mm-hmm. you know. But then to come and see, like, the whole Nashville spectacle, I think that the reason that we do the full, you know, all of that stuff is because, like, they came from far away to get the Nashville thing. And so I'm trying to serve up, with Wild Bill and the Bruisers, we're trying to serve up, like, the Nashville experience, kind of like represent the town. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
You guys do a great job of doing that.
Thanks,
Dad. Yeah, I think mission accomplished in that regard. It's also, I'm also just always fascinated and impressed with your repertoire, I think, is really unique. No, because I think that a lot of the folks who are, you know, a lot of the folks who play in that world, who do a lot of the Broadway stuff, a lot of that repertoire is quite, there's a lot of overlap there. And with you guys, I feel like you guys have somehow managed to create a repertoire that is incredibly engaging and entertaining for people who, again, that may not be their world. They're just there to have a good time and come, you know, check out what Nashville is. But also it's like you guys have, it feels like, again, just as a spectator and as a friend, it feels like you guys have internalized that stuff and made it your own in a way that, don't get wrong, the musicianship on Broadway is, I mean, it's next to none. It's amazing. But a lot of that stuff, in my ears and eyes, is, okay, we're playing the stuff that is expected of us. Whereas you guys, it feels like you guys have really taken on this music and made it your own in a way that's very unique. Like, what was your process over time for making that happen? Was it just sitting with the songs that you felt like worked?
Bro, I think so, yeah. I think it's just... Well, that's the other thing. We still do play a whole bunch of requests. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like about 40% of the show on any given day will be like requests. But you'll see a lot of the same requests over and over again. But yeah, like when you play Chattahoochee like the first 150 times, you know, you know, you probably play closer to what's on the record. And now, like, I'm walking the B section, or like, yeah, like when it goes, well, I sing it in D, and so like on the B section, it'll go to G, and then I have this new trick that it only works on a D note or a G note, but I'll pick the thing up and I'll hold it with one arm mm-hmm. by like the fingerboard, and then I'll just, and I call it the Atlas. It's like, it's really dumb, but you know, like it's half of it is just keeping myself entertained, you know?
Yeah.
Where does the showmanship come from in that regard? This might sound like a ridiculous question.
Not at all.
How much sort of practicing in the mirror, so to speak, is done on your guys' part too? Because again, for people who have not seen Wild Bill and the Bruisers play, first of all, go see Wild Bill and the Bruisers play, but it's a spectacle unlike really anything else on this earth. How much of that is preparation on your guys' part, and how much of it is just kind of what you're saying right now, playing in the moment and seeing what works and kind of sticking to that?
Bro, well, I guess it comes from that. Yeah, that's kind of a long time coming. Before I moved to Nashville in 2011, up in Indiana, my brother and I had like a death metal band
Oh, okay.
And so we watched other dudes in that circuit, like, jumping off of boxes and, like, swinging from rafters and stuff, you know. And I picked up my guitar. I was a guitar player back then. And I would play it behind my head and, you know, all of the hardcore tricks and stuff. Yeah. I never flipped it behind my back. I was too much of a wuss for that.
Yeah, that's a risky one.
Yeah, I always feel like that's one that can go bad. You know what I mean?
But, you know, I did that weekends, and then also I did show choir and, like, musical theater type of stuff. Okay. So a lot of that is practicing in the mirror and, like, you know, hitting the dance moves and all this stuff, yeah, doing the spin and all that stuff. But so I think it comes from, like, the mirror time was in high school. And now I moved here kind of understanding how to command a crowd visually. Mm-hmm. And then I went downtown and I saw, like, Joe Thick play, mm-hmm, you know, if you haven't seen the Eskimo Brothers, I mean, that's kind of like, he's the OG, man, mm-hmm, you know? Like, I didn't see anybody pick up their bass and put it behind their head before Joe. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, I owe a bunch to seeing him, as well as Jay Weaver and, like, Dave Spiker and Johnny Giant. Kind of like, yeah, back when I had, like, a day job, I'd get done busing tables and then clock out, walk over to down to Broadway, mm-hmm, still in, like, my like, button down. I'd grab a PBR and I'd watch, you know, back then it was Don Kelly, and then I'd see California Giant, Johnny G, back when, like, Mike Khalil was playing in that band. Mm. And it'd be like, who was playing drums? Could have been Max Shelf, I'm not sure. But yeah. And then from sitting at the bar at Roberts is really kind of where I thought, oh man, okay, that's the type of country that I want to do. How do I do it now? And then I learned how to play electric bass, and I played sideman for years. And then eventually I wanted to get it upright and see if I could do that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then...
That was the first fretless instrument you'd played. Was that going straight from electric bass to upright?
Mm-hmm. Man, in middle school, I did, like, a semester of concert bass.
Okay.
With the you know, yeah, the bow.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
You were originally a guitar player, though, right? I thought you told me that once. Well, when did you eventually, like, make the transition to bass?
Well, I got a bass when I was, like, 12 years old, and because I wanted to learn how to slap, like, Bootsy Collins and stuff. Uh-huh. But then, you know, and I played guitar for a long time, and I played in a soul band after college, like an R&B outfit, mm-hmm, but it wasn't a whole bunch of gigging, and I was working other day jobs and stuff. And then I got a call for bass from actually Cannon. Mm. Cannon Maltz was playing with this guy, James Sane. And it was, like, every Tuesday morning at Layla's.
Oh, nice.
And that was, like, my first Broadway resident, like, come, like, back every single week gig.
Did you...
And that was bass.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
At what point did you make the leap? Because something that I ask quite a few people this. It's something that I'm fascinated how people get to this point in life. For yourself, when did you take that leap to say, okay, I can do this full time. I don't need to be bussing tables, or, you know, when did that happen for you? And what was that like to finally make that move, which can be a really fucking scary move for people if you've never done it before?
Man, that was, yeah, I remember very specifically. I was working at an Etch restaurant as a like a bar back and, like, a daytime server. Mm-hmm. And I went to the managers and I was like, hey, I want to get a nighttime server job, because I was trying to make some big bucks. You know, I wanted to walk home with, like, you know, like $200-$300+ a night, instead of, like, you know, $150. And then I sat down with the managers and I said, this is my goal. I'd been there for 3 years and I'd been a valet out front for 2 years before that. And that was 2019, the fall of 2019. And at that point I had a Saturday and a Sunday gig at what's now Whiskey Row, Dirk Bentley's bar. And then I had still had that Tuesday. We might have lost the Tuesday gig by then, but I was playing those three gigs with James Sane, and then Ben Donovan was the other thing. We were putting together some gigs.
So you're doing primarily sideman stuff at that point?
All sideman. I didn't start the Bruisers until...
Because that's a pretty new thing.
Yeah. I think we started the Bruisers in winter of 2020, right before COVID, hit. But yeah, 2019, I had that meeting with the managers, and I said, this is my goal. And they said, well, that's not in the foreseeable future. And I said, well, respectfully, this will be my 2 weeks notice, gentlemen, and so I worked out the rest of the 2 weeks. But I went and hit the pavement, and I booked for Ben Donovan's band. We went over to AJ's, and we already had some gigs at Crossroads, and eventually we got into Paradise. It was back when it was Paradise Park and Downtown Sporting Club. Now it's Garth Brooks's place, but, within 2 weeks, I had just about enough work with these dudes to where it was comparable to the money that I was making as a server assistant.
Yeah.
But, 2 weeks notice, man. I saw Brett Strader the other day. I remember very specifically, like, maybe a year or two ago when he was like, hey, man, what should I do?
Yeah, because he was making that same move.
And I told him, you know, what I tell a lot of folks where he was at, man, it's like, you're too talented to not be doing this full time. Any day that you're not playing a gig, I mean, what, are you going to get off of your shift, like working your 9-to-5, go home and shed? No, man, you want to do that on stage. You want to have like so much of that experience and know-how of like how to, you know, play music. It happens on the bandstand. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you got to do it on the bandstand, dude.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we've talked about this a little bit, Brian, myself, off camera, but there's something really strange that's happening now with social media, where you'll have these young guys and girls who are monster players, or at least monster players for, 30-second sprints. And don't get me wrong, that's a tough skill set to acquire, and to be able to do that. I mean, that's beautiful, and that takes its own time to put in that attention.
Oh yeah.
But that's different than the skills you get learning how to play on stage, and not just in terms of showmanship and being able to direct a crowd, but the way in which you interact with your fellow musicians on stage. All of that is such a different skill set that these people just aren't, they're not acquiring it because you just don't have the time clocked in on stage. I just feel like it does sort of, for lack of a better word, it pushes you along much quicker than if you're just sitting at home woodshedding in your bedroom. Yeah. Don't get wrong, you can get great that way, but you can expedite the process in a strange roundabout way by just putting that time in on stage. And not only does it expedite the process, I think it makes you a better musician because it really makes you have to be in the moment. It makes you have to
learn the intuitive side of things.
Exactly.
Rather than
in a weird way, it's like conversation. I think you can you can have great linguistic ability and have great vocabulary and have a great understanding of concepts in one's mind. It's a different thing to sit down and converse with someone. It's a different thing to just get the skills of being able to like talk to a person and have that. Like, again, like that's why I love doing this is I love sitting down with people and picking the brain. I love the back and forth, the kind of, it's like a game of Pong. Like that's really what it is. And being able to hear, express something, hear how that's reflected back at you from another person, reflect it back. Like that to me is one of the great thrills of life, and I the equivalent of that in music is, in a weird way, I feel almost being lost in the moment, and I wish more people would kind of take your advice in that regard and just spend as much time as they can whether it's, you know, good for their well-being and pocketbook or not, and try to do that more, you know?
Dude, well, you're getting at the most paramount thing, in my opinion. Dude, it's your ears. It's got to be like when somebody makes a decision, you have to be able to hear it, locate that, and then synthesize something in real time. It's the same thing as having a conversation. You got to, I mean, there's one thing. Oh, I worked on all these, half diminished licks. Yada, 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 yada. Yeah. But then if you just like that, that's not how you have a conversation.
Totally.
Like you don't go to a coffee date and just talk about the Roman Empire for an hour and a half. You know what I mean?
I mean, if you're Brian, you do.
I mean, I might, but yeah, depending on who you are. But like, yeah, that's just, you know, you have to be able to meet your fellow bandmates where they're at and have that conversation.
And it's playing to, I think the best music is always in service of the music. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I love musicianship. I love watching folks who can just fucking smoke it up there. It's great. My favorite music in whatever style it is, whether I'm going to see a great jazz band play, whether I'm going to watch a reggae band, it doesn't matter. It's who can serve the song the best. And don't get me wrong, you use those skill sets to be able to do that oftentimes or always. But I love watching people, and it could be one guy on a stage with a guitar, or it could be, you know, a 6-piece funk band. I love watching people serve the song. And sometimes serving the song does mean you're getting crazy and you're playing behind your head, or you're doing sometimes that's what the song needs. But that's the skill to me that I love. Not only do I love participating in that, I love watching that. I love watching when you have performers who are really, really, really trying to serve the song and get at with that. And get in. It is this weird thing where the ego has to be removed from the equation. Like all of that. And it's this very strange dynamic that feels almost in conflict with itself, because you spend all of this fucking time and energy trying to be proficient at what you're doing. And at the end of the day, you're going to use that, but at the end of the day, it's not about that. It's about the song. It's about trying to get the song across. It's all about taste. And I love when people can do that. And I love when I see people like yourself who can do both of those things. Both ends of the spectrum are there. You can have the great flash of the thing, which is, as a viewer, so enticing and great to experience, whilst also serving the thing. And I think that's very difficult for people. I think a lot of, and I don't know if it is because of the ego part of the equation or what it is, but I think for a lot of people that can be hard to let go of that in a way and just try to best serve the song that you're playing.
I dig that, dude. Yeah. Yes. People come for the antics and the visuals and all that bull crap, but then they stay for the, oh wow, he played our wedding song.
Exactly.
And then on a Randy Travis, like, I'm gonna love you forever, forever and ever, amen. I'm not picking up the thing and I'm not doing the Gene Simmons tongue and like all this, you know, all this bullshit. I'm like singing to these people right here that are sitting at bar seat number 1 and 2, and you know.
As a performer, what do you get out of it?
Out of which?
Out of all of it. When you're up there playing, other than clocking in the time that you get to spend on your instrument, which is a big thing. I mean, just to get the time to yourself to sit or stand and play, that's a big thing in life, because life's busy. That aside, what's the thing you get out of it?
Dude, this is kind of interesting, because the more I've gotten comfortable with the performing aspect and just being on stage and being in front of people, like looking at you, just getting oogled all day, the more comfortable I am, the more I am demanding of people to give me their attention and more so have a good time. Mm-hmm. You came to Nashville, aren't you, on vacation? You're on Broadway, dude. There's no way that a local's here. You're here to see something that you don't get to see every day. So, let's smile and, cheer. So, I try to get I try to get as much audience participation as possible, you know, and like I'll try to flash a smile. And then when I get a smile back or like I see somebody moving, then it's like, oh, okay, cool. This is, it's not, we're not just doing this to a brick wall. We're actually making a difference in these people's day. It's not, you know, we're not like saving people's lives. We're just singing pretty songs. It's just singing pretty songs.
But I would argue you kind of are, because that's kind of the point of all of this, you know. otherwise, I'm not sticking around. If I get a world without music, I don't know if I want to stick around, you know.
Man.
But I think what you're getting at is really important, though. But I would also say that it might go farther than you think with a lot of people.
Perhaps.
Even if they are just on vacation and just here to, you know, get drunk and fuck off for a little while.
I just want them to be nice to us. Make some noise. Fill the bar. Tip the bartender, dude. I mean, and I'm just talking about the bar gigs, which is, you know, 99.99999% of our gigs are bar gigs, you know.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's about making the bar room feel like, you know, like it's full of friendly faces.
And I think also too, there's a certain level when you clock that amount of time in where you're telling the audience, trust us, we're not going to waste your time. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like that might sound sort of flippant, but there's a certain level of trust involved where you are saying to the audience, just go along with us. You're in good hands.
I dig that. What's in your wallet? Wait, what's the, is that Allstate or something? It's one of those.
Yeah.
You know, one of the.
Yeah.
One of those companies.
That could be like your new slogan.
Yeah.
You trust us. You're in good hands.
Yeah.
No, but I think that's something that performers of all stripes can struggle with. Mm-hmm. Because there's just something about being a person where oftentimes most of us care about what other people think about us. and when you're performing, whatever form that performing is taking, there for a lot of people is that thing in the back or maybe the front of your mind, which is saying, am I wasting these people's fucking time? Are they impressed with me?
Yeah.
And I think the quicker you can get that out of your mind and you just, it's for myself, I'm at a point as a performer where to me it's like, well, they're either going to go along with me and they're going to trust that, okay, I'm going to lead you something interesting here to somewhere interesting, or they're not. So get that out of your mind, because it's not really entering into the equation. Either they're going to come along and you know that your skill set is going to entertain them, or they're not, in which case, okay, they're not along for the ride. So many people get caught up in that cycle of thinking, shit, am I like good enough to like, am I going to walk them all this way to a turd? You know what I mean? Like, what's going on? You know?
Dude, that's like, I was talking about being really demanding with the crowd and getting more, you know, more comfortable with like doing the frontman thing. A lot of it, for me, like I'll get more comfortable with the room if I kind of step aside myself and just speak to them, like, hey, like, what do you want to hear? Or if, like, I've been doing this thing lately, if people are walking out, I'll stop them. I'll say, hey, hold on, wait, come back. What do I have to play for you to stay here for one more song? And a lot of the time I'll feed it to them, like, do you want to hear Johnny Cash? What do I got to do? And they'll say, oh, yeah, I'll listen to Johnny Cash. And they'll come back in and I'll address the rest of the room. Hey, okay, buy them a shot. They're staying around for one more song. Thank you for being a good sport. And then I'll, like, kick off Ring of Fire or some bullshit. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or, like, you know, yeah, talking to people, like, it's not a concert. This is a bar room. You know, I'm going to talk to you. You know, like, where are you from? You know?
And it's also acknowledging that the skills involved in performing for a sold out theater are different than a packed bar.
And, totally.
Bro, and I want to work on that. I want to learn how to do a theater. I want to learn how to do that.
Like, that's another thing that I think is oftentimes overlooked, is people think that it's all one and the same, and it's not. I mean, there's obviously there's overlap and there's skills that will transfer over, but being able to hold the attention of a crowded bar is very different than holding the attention of a crowded theater. Now, I would actually argue that the former is probably much more difficult, but they both require a different finesse. And I think oftentimes you need to conquer the first before you get to the second. And it's one of those things in life where the first seems to be much more difficult. At least my experience from the people that I know and what I've taken in life, that's a much taller order.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's definitely the thing. It's like, you cut your teeth in the bar room and then you tweak it when you get to bigger rooms. Mm-hmm. Man, you guys know like Ronnie James Dio and like Bruce Dickerson, like big hair metal acts, right?
Yeah.
So like I've came up in metal and stuff, and I've watched like, you know, VH1 Behind the Music and all this bullshit. And a lot of what those dudes would say is like, okay, all of your gestures can't be like here. It needs to be here.
Yeah.
It needs to be legible as much as from the first row to the people in the nosebleeds.
Yeah.
They got to be able to see you and like think that they're like you're talking to them.
Yeah.
And so with the bass, it's easy to do some of those big things. And I'm working, you know, I guess a lot of my gesture is large and should be read from back there. But I've been thinking about that part of my stage performance for, you know, decades.
Yeah, I think about seeing a band like Bon Jovi. Seeing them in a if Bon Jovi is performing the same way in a small bar that they do in some massive sold out arena, it's not going to work. I mean, as stupid as that sounds, like don't get me wrong, Bon Jovi's played those bars before and they've made it work. But if you were to just transfer over the show that's being performed in front of however many thousand people that are all screaming and have the Bon Jovi t-shirts on to Layla's or whatever, it's not going to work. They're two totally different things.
On the other side of the coin, I feel like if you give that same like stadium show in a little bar, then you're like,
they can be gripped. It can be
then
gripping.
It feels like a ridiculous like punk basement show.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah. That takes me back to like the hardcore days bands were like, you know, oh, we're gonna throw our guitars around. Oh, knock the light out. Keep going. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I think you always want to skew towards like big gesture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, because at the end of the day, it's performance. I mean, it's performance. It's theater. Yeah. And when you're, it's this, you know what, it to me, I think of the same way as my mind goes to film and theater for this. There are phenomenal actors who can conquer one of those worlds. It's very difficult for people to do both. And it's because the grandeur of the thing, the scale of the thing is very different.
Absolutely.
The people who can command a room and perform powerful acts of performance in a theater, whether it's drama, comedy, whatever it might be, that's so different than being on a film set and having all this lighting going and having a camera that is going to be giving you your single master shot of you as a performer. That's all we get. We're not seeing there's nothing outside of this proscenium. There's nothing over here. It's just you. That skill set's so different. There are people who do that. There are people who can transfer and kind of slide into one and slide in. And that to me is just, I don't understand how people can do that. When I see people who are incredible stage performers and can also do film, to me, that's like being a world-class like MMA fighter and a world-class basketball player, you know, at the same time. It's like, okay. Like, it, to me, those are just, those are, there's, in a way, so little overlap there in my mind. And maybe part of it's because I'm not an actor. But to me, I'm just in awe of people who can do that.
Yeah, brother. Yeah. I'm trying to think of good examples of that.
It's hard. In music, it's hard because it's very rare that you see bands or, you know, performers who when they make it to that level of success where they are playing the sold out stadium, that they go do the bar gig or that they go, you know, maybe the closest thing we got to this in like the 90s was like maybe like MTV Unplugged or something like that.
Oh, wow. But, yeah.
Or actually, you know what? Maybe in sort of maybe nowadays it's something like Tiny Desk or something. That something like that could be or the Rusick podcast. But like, woo! No, but like,
hell yeah.
I think that might be, those are the things that, those are the standouts in my mind. And maybe that's why those things were very compelling. I mean, obviously MTV Unplugged was huge and the Tiny Desk stuff is still huge. So maybe that's what that's feeding. Mm-hmm. But most of the time you don't see that, you know, most of the time when you see Sabrina Carpenter or whomever perform, They're not going from that massive arena tour with all of the lighting and crew and shit, you know, the flying around on live wires and all this crazy stuff, live wires. But you don't see that person then go and do like, okay, I'm playing for 20 people in this little bar where half the audience isn't paying attention and talking over me. It's like, you just don't see it. So.
Yeah, before we started, we were talking about doing those corporate gigs.
Yeah.
That's the spot.
That's the equivalent right there.
Oh, man. Before we started, we were talking about, you know, like, last year I did a corporate gig for, like, it could have been like a pipe fitters conference or something like that, but it was in one of the big, like, one of those gigantic, grandiose hotels downtown Nashville, and... I was doing the full Wild Bill thing, but there were like, it was a room of maybe 300 people, gigantic banquet hall with, you know, round tables everywhere. And everybody's like bustling and talking. There's a buffet way over on the other side. There's a bar like way over there. And it might be like the length of half a football field. And it's huge.
Yeah.
And we're up on a stage, there's lights, there's sound and all that stuff, and I'm giving it everything. And then we got done with, like, you know, Hot Dog, or one of our, like, you know, one of our more, like, bombastic songs. And then I heard no audience reaction, just a couple of...
Soul crushing.
That hurts, dude.
So what do you do in that scenario? Do you turn it up and double down, or do you just...
You know,
go more chill.
That's that. Well, that was, it was kind of a, I learned the hard way on that one. And now I know how to approach these corporate gigs.
Uh-huh.
Still give it your all, but it's really, I'm performing for myself and I'm performing to make Roger and Ryan laugh.
Yeah.
More than like these guys out here that are like talking about like the prices of their industrial goods.
You
know what I mean? We're not here to see a band. I'm here to, you know, like, I came all the way from Milwaukee to try to get a better price on these dang pipes, and I'm going to get them. You know what I mean? I'm not here for music. I'm here for the business. And then here I am playing on stage as Bill. Okay, I'm here to get the paycheck and then do my best and keep the songs coming.
Sometimes those gigs are kind of fun, though, just because I feel like nobody really cares what you're doing, so you can kind of fuck around more.
You can do anything you want.
Yeah, no, like, yeah. People aren't going to notice it.
Yeah, there's a level of freedom there that if
just
somebody...
Just keep it silly, no one notices.
It's another thing, too, where I imagine, you know, someone who doesn't sell out theaters every day, I imagine it's a very different expectation on oneself when everyone's showing up paying ticket price to find, okay, they got to find their seat, they had to hire a babysitter, whatnot, right? They're there to see you.
Yeah.
Whereas I find like gigs like that a lot more stressful because it's like,
yeah,
there's like an expectation.
You have intentional eyes on you. They came to see you do your thing. They want to hear your songs. They don't want
to
hear
everybody's like, you know, there to listen to the band. And I feel like there's more pressure in that situation.
I totally agree, but I also think the people for whom I have the most respect are the people who can be in that situation and still go for it and still say, fuck it, we're going to try some shit. And whatever, again, whatever yes. world you're talking about, whether it, you know, whether it's performing on a stage in any capacity, the people who can say, no, fuck it. They, again, it comes back to what you're talking about earlier. No, trust me, I got this. I may not know exactly where we're going right now, but just, they know that they're in good hands. Let's see where this leads.
Hop and, aboard, everybody.
We're exactly. on, and sometimes you know. That's going to lead somewhere magical. And other times it's not. But it's like, to me, as a consumer, as somebody who's on the other side of that buying the ticket, that's what I want to see. I don't want to see someone go in there and under the pressure of all of that expectation, just do the safe thing. I want to see the person go for it. And that's what I love about art. I love when people have the balls, whatever you want to call it, to just say, fuck it. No, trust me. Let's see what happens. I love that.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Well said. Well said. When you can, man. So the last time that we did something like that, it felt like exactly like that in, we were up in my hometown in Indiana, at a smaller theater called Duncan Hall. Mm-hmm. It's like off of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, Indiana. And we were opening up for Jim Lauderdale. And I look out in the crowd and I see like a lot of familiar faces and like my buddies from like high school, like Joey and Jordan and their mom April came out and like everybody's there and it felt like, oh my gosh, but we tried a new song that night and I went up on the lyrics, but like nobody cared. You know, I did something silly with my bass and we're right back on the train, man, you know. But you gotta be able to let go in that situation. And also the other thing is to not fall down the hill. When you slip, don't fall all the way down,
yeah.
dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you gotta get good catch yourself.
Being able to recover is like, I feel like, one of the most important skills.
Speaking of catching yourself, dude, I was on a private gig up in Connecticut like a week and a half ago. And I dropped my bass, dude. Yeah, yeah. I dropped it like right into my amp because I've been trying to do like new things. You got like, there's only so many times that you can spin your bass or put it behind your head. You got to have like a full vocabulary of like different moves to make it sound like a full sentence to keep, you know, make people keep listening. Or in art, in my case, to keep watching. Because, like, what the heck is he going to do next? It's not the same recycled moves. So I stand the bass up, and I go to do a quick heel spin. And by the time I came around, oh, it fell a little bit and right into my amplifier. Caught it. We do, like, this surfing, surfing bird medley, like that and Wipeout and Miserloo.
Okay.
And so nice. one of the guitar spots where like I'll do like a windmill like hit and then hold it and I'll try to spin, wasn't there where I wanted it to be.
How premeditated are the performance moves in your set? Do you find that you're kind of constantly switching them in and out places to see what works best, or are they very predetermined? Okay, this part in this particular song, I'm going to go for this, and then that's going to transition. Like,
how I is liken that? It to partner dancing.
Okay,
so like, if you're gonna dance with a gal, it's like two stepping on a dance floor. It's like, okay, I'm going to do this move, spin off of the left hand, but if you keep doing that same move over and over again, it gets tired. So you got to have like other ones that work. To answer your question, a lot of those there, I know that there's a spot in the song where like bass drops out and like there's a stop. That's a good time to do something, whether it be like a backspin where I kick from the back or like a push spin where I use my hand and catch it. I'm going to interrupt myself here. I was playing at Acme on Friday, and I did a push spin with my bass, caught it on the third spin right there.
Oh.
And it was a Roger song, so I didn't have to sing. Roger was, I can't remember what the song was, but I caught it and I went this way. But the thing is, at Acme, it's like, you know, the stage is right here in the center of the room.
Yeah.
And so there's people on all sides of you. And so there are people over here, like in these two tables, that definitely caught me going. Every once in a while it happens, dude. Oh, dude.
Oh, man.
Yeah, man. But like, yeah. And like the behind the head thing is one thing that I can do. That's like a move that I can do, while playing. I can also put it on my right leg and hop around on it and play it kind of like a guitar. And the other thing is, like, if it's a G note or a D note, I can do the Atlas and use one hand. So I kind of have like a drop down menu of like these moves that I can do at this point, or like these moves that I can do at a stop. And it's just like partner dancing. It's you know, like the more you do it, the more you realize, okay, this is an appropriate step to take at this point in time, you know?
The album came out last year, right?
Yeah, 24.
When you were doing that, what was your mindset with trying to capture that performance on a record? Because it is such a, it's such a show watching you guys play. One of the things I think is really impressive about that album is the energy is all there. How did you manage to put that on a record like that?
Bro, we were in pre-production for the record. We were really thinking about, selfishly, you know, taking pieces of country music that we all really enjoyed. Like, oh, this song is an ode to Jerry Jeff Walker. This song is like a psychobilly rockabilly thing. This one is a honky tonk thing. This would play good at, like, you know, opening for the Cowpokes or something like that. We wanted to have like a bit of each of those elements and showcase them in each of the songs. So if you ask me, I think that it's kind of like every song goes in a different.
It's almost like a tour of country music in a way. Yeah. Like, as a listener, I'm like, oh, that's what it feels like for me. It's a little bit of a tour of country music, which I really enjoy.
I wanted like an element of every bit, but I wanted the whole thing to kind of feel like a party.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely does.
Okay. To answer your question. So there's a few songs where we kind of let loose and kind of like let it dangle.
Yeah.
If you listen to Hot Dog and Speed Demon, there's parts where I'm barking on the microphone. There's parts where I'm like trying to do the David Lee Roth scream. And then there's also spots where, like, in Speed Demon, I was pretty sick at the time when I cut vocals, but, there's some juicy coughs that you can hear if you listen to the vocal track. It's like, they left that in, and the fuck we did.
You know? That's great though. I think again, for that kind of music, that's what you need. It gives it that life.
I wanted to be like as raw as possible and like, you know, honor the show, the live show.
Oh yeah. Dude, I'm so glad you did this, man. This was a ball. This was so much fun. This is one that we've been looking forward to for a while. We're like, we have to get Will in here. So this is a ball.
Yeah.
I love you too, man. We got one at some point we'll get the full band in here. We'll get Wild Bill and the Bruisers in. That'll be a ball.
Get Hartman and Roger, man.
Yeah. We definitely will. Yeah.
Dude, you know, I was talking before we get out of here, I gotta tell you, I was on the river with Brett Strader and Caitlin and we were talking about, man, Brian reminds of somebody. And it was like a five hour, you know, we did the Narrows of the Harpeth thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever get, Clint Eastwood?
No, it's so funny though. So often I get like, hey, you look like this guy, or you remind me of this person. It's a different person every single time.
Dude, it's not a visual thing. It's like the silent confidence.
Yeah.
careful what you wish for.
No, it's just funny. Everyone, I get that all the time. You know, people I can say I look like somebody, which I guess is a compliment. I look.
I'll take that
as a good thing.
Who's Clint Eastwood's son?
Clint Eastwood. You look like old Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood now.
I have not heard.
You do kind of look like Clint Eastwood's son, whatever the hell his name is. He's another actor, too. I can see that a little bit. Okay, whatever.
I'm going to pull up a picture.
Yeah, there we go. We'll get our phones out and just see who Brian looks like. really, thank you, dude. This was a ball. I appreciate it. I love it.
I appreciate you, brother.
Come back and do it again.